Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
A cascade of failures and neglect has plunged the nation of Venezuela into a 21st century chaos that may be a hint of disturbing things to come in this century. Protests, blackouts, a newly imposed two-day work week for all government workers, schools have been closed on Fridays, all because of a drought-induced energy crisis at the massive Guri Dam, home to Venezuela's largest hydroelectric power station. As Hannah Dreyer, the Venezuela correspondent for the Associated Press, reports from Caracas, it's just the beginning of Venezuela's problems right now.
There is a sense here that the lights are going out in this country. It's not just President Nicolas Maduro who is freaking out about the lower water levels at the Guri Dam. Everybody here is freaking out about this. There's a real possibility that the whole country is going to be in blackout. This is a country where already it's become acceptable to skip work to go grocery shopping, where already there's an informal curfew and people don't leave their houses at night. Already, virtually everybody who can is trying to find a way to move out of the country and go to Miami or go to Colombia. And so this electricity crisis is, it's insult to injury. It's just another way that it feels like the whole country is collapsing.
Venezuela's case is special in that the entire infrastructure of the country has been neglected for years. Can you describe that?
That's right. So what we have happening right now in Venezuela is two things. There's a profound drought, and that really is happening. In Caracas right now, it smells like a campfire. The hills are totally dry and they're burning. We haven't had rain for months and months. And the other thing that's happening is that there just hasn't been the investment here that experts, even the government itself, said was needed years ago. So back in 2010, President Hugo Chavez said that he was going to spend billions of dollars to build lots of new electricity generating plants. He did spend billions of dollars, but those new plants never got online. And so the whole country is dependent on this one dam to provide energy. And as the drought continues, water levels there are falling below the turbines. And if that happens, the whole country will be plunged into the dark.
And with oil prices at this level, the government cannot pay its bills, and there's no sign for any relief there, right?
Right. When President Hugo Chavez was at his height, oil prices were at about $100 a barrel. Now they're down to half that. The country can't pay to import food, can't pay to import medicine, and isn't letting multinational companies take their profits out, which means that those companies are leaving. That's why it's hard to get an international flight out of Venezuela, hard to make an international call from here.
And the poor in Venezuela do have a long memory, and their sense that Hugo Chavez died with any of the good luck that Venezuela could ever have has fueled this opposition that could actually remove President Maduro from power. What is the state of play in this petition drive?
Right. The poor were left out of the Venezuelan political discourse for most of this country's history. Hugo Chavez came to power and for the first time included the poor in the spoils of the country's oil wealth. And that was a huge shift and one that isn't going away. People love Hugo Chavez, who died 3 years ago. People aren't going to stop loving him. But what you hear a lot is, I'm Chavista, but I'm not Madurista, which means they support Chavez, but they don't support the new president, Nicolas Maduro. Just yesterday, the opposition launched its recall drive against Maduro to get him out of office this year. Some of the people who were the most loyal supporters of Chavez are signing up. There was a picture that went all around the country yesterday of a woman who had a tattoo of Chavez on her arm, signing the petition to get rid of Maduro, who was his handpicked successor. And that's because things have just become unlivable here. You know, there are food lines, there's insane crime, everybody's been robbed. And now you come home and you can't turn on the lights and there's no water coming out of your tap.
And three-digit inflation, that's just one of the maladies that form that bleak picture that you've described so vividly. Speaking from Caracas, Hannah Dreyer is Venezuela correspondent for the Associated Press. Thank you.
Thank you.
Considering Venezuela's dam-induced energy crisis, it wasn't so long ago that dams were thought of as man-made miracles.
Norris Dam, completed in 1936, impounds the waters of the Clinch and Powell rivers in a great storage reservoir. The second storage dam, similar to this one, controls the Hiawassee in North Carolina.
In 1933, FDR signed the Tennessee Valley Authority authorization, and 16 dams were built along the associated waterways. Dams are still being built and planned all over the world, from Honduras to China, but in the face of droughts and changing weather patterns, are these expensive and prestigious projects still viable? John Matthews is Secretariat Coordinator for the Alliance for Global Water Adaptation, and he speaks to us from Corvallis, Oregon.
Dams are designed and have been designed really for thousands of years to provide specific services to help even out the climate. But we're also in an era of such rapid climate change at the moment in which we face and can really see over much less than the scale of a human lifetime that dams may be designed for the wrong climate. And there are places all around the world in which you see many different types of dams, hydroelectric maybe most visibly, in which they're beginning to diverge from the climate that they were designed for as they enter new types of climates.
And I think the engineers look at a river and say, we could put a dam there and then there'd be water and that's the end of it. And I think most Americans would look at the dams around them and say, oh, it just stops up the water. That's all it does. There's nothing else going on. But in the long arc of time, things change when you put a dam in place. What kinds of things change? And what they're seeing in Venezuela, of course, is climate related, but there are other dams around the world where time has not been a friend.
That's right. I think they're actually good examples of both where time has shown that some designs have weathered very well, but there are many more examples, especially from the 20th century, in which we see a huge amount of divergence. Venezuela is a good example of a huge mega dam. It's one of the largest hydroelectric dams in the world, has a massive reservoir behind it, supplies about 70%, ideally, of the country's electricity. But the water levels behind the face of the dam have dropped so low that it's difficult to have enough head, enough force to be able to make sure that water can go through the turbines. In the U.S., the Hoover Dam is another very good example of a huge dam. It's about 80 years old that is also beginning to diverge quite rapidly from its climate. That's a dam that was designed for flood control. It was designed to generate electricity and to store water for the area around Las Vegas for water supply purposes. And there's a huge 100-foot, a little over 100-foot bathtub ring that's been emerging over the past few years around the Hoover Dam. And it's beginning to sink in the reservoir behind it, Lake Mead, so low that there's a good chance that the turbines will be unable to generate electricity at all in the next 10, 15 years.
Before we go, talk a little bit about some of the other ecological problems. For instance, the Aswan Dam in Egypt that's used for agricultural purposes. I think over time, the soil has degraded because sediment from the water over time actually makes the soil salty. You've got the Snake River in the Pacific Northwest that's lost its salmon runs because of dams on the Columbia and the Snake. What are the implications there?
Well, I would say that especially over the 19th and 20th centuries, we took a much less humble approach to how it is that we design dams. And the biggest impacts were really in terms of ecological impacts. Climate change is certainly going to make that much worse. The examples that you provided are high-profile ones. Their impacts are obvious, but actually big dams can profoundly change rivers. I think that there are also some really interesting positive examples. One of my favorites is from Sichuan Province in China. It's a 2,300-year-old dam that was designed for flood control and for irrigation projects. It still serves about 20 million people in that area. And it had an integrated fish passage from the initial design. I think you see a much more recent recognition over the last 20 years, 30 years by the engineering community in particular to say, we need to make sure that these dams are less bad and ideally that they really minimize the types of impacts that they have on the environment. And there's also been some really interesting work very recently to try and ensure that these dams are much more humble in terms of what they assume about the future climate over as current dams now, they may well last many centuries into the future, will face very difficult to predict climate impacts that could also make some of the ecological impacts and trade-offs much more difficult to negotiate.
Any place in the world where a big dam is actually going to be dynamited to actually get rid of it because the consequences have been so bad?
There are about 80,000 dams in the world. About 8,000 dams are in the U.S., so we have about 10% of the global total. The U.S., especially in the press, we tend to make a big deal about the removal of dams, and we have done some significant work. We've taken down about 60 dams in the U.S., but big dams are very difficult to remove. It's very challenging to pull down a dam. It's much better. It's much more progressive to try and design a humble, enduring dam.
John Matthews is Secretariat Coordinator for the Alliance for Global Water Adaptation. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
So tell us about any dams or reservoirs near your home.
This is Sarah from Grays Lake, Illinois, and a lot of changes is happening with the beaches. There's been a lot of dredging to keep up with erosion and trying to repair the shoreline, but with little results. There's been a lot of money spent from many agencies, but Mother Nature is still winning.
Arlington, Mass., the reservoirs during the fall and winter were the lowest I've seen since 1971. When I moved to Massachusetts, there was land that had always been underwater before. It was shocking to see. Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE. That's our number. Comment at thetakeaway.org.
Support for The Takeaway comes from Lumosity, offering a 10-minute fit test to challenge memory, attention, and problem-solving. With brain games to calculate baseline scores and build a brain training program, performance can be compared with global averages. Learn more at Lumosity.com. And Staples, offering tools for small business, including color copies and presentations, booklets and manuals, and custom frame prints and posters. Designed and printed in-store or ordered online at Staples.com. Staples, make more happen.